Hello, welcome to the Sound of La Liga podcast, brought to you by the World Football Index. My name is La Liga Gav, and joining me today is Joe.
Good evening, sir.
How are you, Joe?
Gav, it's lots of scarves out over here, and thermals, and the image of a roaring fire, and the early Bob Dylan records. It's really November now, and beautiful sunrises, and I get to talk to you. It's all good.
What a man, Joe. What a man. And our new voice, Daniel. How are you, Chief?
Hi, Gav. I'm great, thank you. I've just had a big piece of steak, and I'm ready for this.
Lovely. Okay, Friday night's games. Malaga 3, Sporting 2. Joe, what a game to get the weekend started. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and it's leading us into believing that there are going to be so many goals in the overall campaign, and whether or not we'll beat the tally of goals. And these kind of matches on the Friday night can suggest that. Another cracker. I think first and foremost, you take Sporting and coming off the back of a solid point against Sevilla. I thought for 65 minutes, they had the right to believe that they were the big bad Wolves and they were taking to Malaga and they were going to blow the house down. But then you had the three little pigs in Fornals, Ontiveros, who came on and made huge impact in the game, and Sandro. And I think these three players were a great representative of the Malaga comeback and the Malaga surge to go and win this game. You had Fornals, who I thought deserved his goal in the first half, controlled the game. For such a young player, he's going to be one to watch if he's already doing that. And then you add Ontiveros, who, as soon as he come on, there was a dramatic change in Malaga's final thirds and their attacking play. He was taking players on. Again, another young player. And then Sandro, who we've questioned throughout the campaign so far. He's been guilty of switching off in games, of almost justifying Barcelona so carelessly disposing of him. But he was another player in this game that really stepped up to it. And I think we saw good things from Malaga in the second period.
Yeah, Joe, we absolutely tore Sandro apart on an earlier pod. Do you reckon he listens to this podcast?
I think a lot of these players tune in, put their feet up and digest the overall weekend. I always thought that as a football player, that you don't get to see the other games, or you don't choose to watch the other games when you get the chance. But I'm not sure whether he's suited to a more central role, whether he's somebody who's going to come out wide to begin and use his acceleration as a way to impact the game. I actually thought we saw a bit of both in the second period, so we can't come to a conclusion on that. But he's somebody who can offer quite a lot to the game, and I think he can play a big part in Malaga this season.
And what about yourself, Dan? How have you seen Malaga so far this season?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I only saw the extended highlights of this game, but the highlights what I did see, and I was impressed with him. Going back to Sandro, as you both have discussed, a lot of question marks over him still, but I do feel that as things are starting to tick with the team in general, I think we're starting to see a lot more from him and a lot of stuff what we thought we would see at Barcelona. They're in the goals. If you look at the last couple of games, they conceded four against Atletico, they scored four against Leganés. So I feel that they will take some admirals this season, but I do think that they'll put a couple past quite a few teams.
And lads, with Granada 1, Deportivo 1, this was heading towards, you know, that game that we usually pass by in the pod due to its annoyance and the negative outcome. But to be fair, the second half wasn't that bad at all. Dan, did Deportivo mess up with that one?
Yes, Gav, I believe that strongly. You look at the form in the season so far, I've only got two wins in the league, which is quite worrying. And to have so many chances, to have so much of a ball and attacking play, to only get a point is quite worrying. I think it is 2 points dropped, but then you look at the save by Ochoa, what a massive save that
is. Yeah, yeah. That was outstanding. That was incredible, that save.
Absolute world class. We talk about how good some goals are at times, or attacking passes, but that saves. That's got Granada a point.
And Joe, looking at Granada, they're doomed, aren't they?
I bring it back to my first week with this Granada in this campaign. And I think a little selfishly, I had this image of a Granada where I was going to see a lot of Sergi Samper. And I think they've annoyed me on the grounds that we're not seeing him. We're seeing a side that don't appear to have any direction. And the first half in this particular fixture really said a lot about them. Very flat and not offering a lot. And I agree with Dan there in the fact that Depor really should have come away with all 3 points. I don't see great things for Granada. And I hate in the early part of any campaign where you get a side that look like they're going to slip off. It's always very pleasant to reach the second half of the campaign and still have a sense of all 20 sides have, for better words, a lot to play with. Yeah, and I just think there's a chance with this Granada that we're going to get to Christmas and we're going to see them in a really almost doomed situation, as you use the words. I wonder if it's a case of, are you better off sticking with Paco Gemes in the first place, who had an idea, and whether or not I would make a case that that idea wasn't working with Granada, but is it better to have an idea and go with it and see it out rather than have no direction? And when it does get tough, to come out and play and not have any sense of exactly what you're going to do. I think that's a case with this side at the moment.
Well, yeah, when Granada hired Paco Gemes, they also planted 24 different players at his feet. Now, surely to God, they knew how Paco works. What he did with that Real team, okay, they were absolutely chaotic scenes most matches. But you kind of always knew with Paco, he'd rather take the defeat and win a game afterwards than continuously fight for draws. And okay, they played a few top teams at the start of the season as well. They were, you know, properly hammered. But there's just, I think it's the romantic in me. I honestly believe if either Paco had stayed on, wouldn't be in this situation, or at the very least you'd see signs of them coming out of themselves. But at the moment, they are absolutely dreadful to watch. They look lost.
Yeah, they really do. And I think the idea of the romantic in this situation, it's one that you look at this particular side and lost. It's lost at sea. And I just, there's a case that they're one of the worst La Liga sides for a while. I think Dan would even come in and agree with that one.
Definitely. Yeah. Very poor. And what I think, lads, just asking you two of this, the players who have been brought in, how must they feel so early into a campaign? Paco's gone. Are they going to have to start a pre-season again with a new guy? I really don't see no logic. I agree with you, Gav. I don't see no logic with getting rid of Paco so early on.
So we're all in agreement. Granada and muck.
Yep.
La Real 2 and Lely 0. Joe, personally, I thought La Real were brilliant. And they deserved that win, didn't they?
Yeah, and I'm going to begin this with a hint of gloating in the idea that last week I spoke, I think it was more to Carlo and to his idea of going into this fixture, and maybe we would come and see an Atleti that would go on and win. But again, there was evidence to suggest that when you have a side who are playing so happy, that appear to have a direction, that have a lot of informed players, that they can cause even the best of sides problems. And I think we saw that in this fixture. One player that for me really stood out was the left back, Yuri. I thought he commanded that left hand side of the pitch for large periods of the match. I would point to Atleti and one concerning part about Atleti, and that would be that I've always felt with Real Sociedad that when they're playing well, they have that really nice football to them. But there's always that sense of a side that are lightweight. And in a sense, that's a perfect match for the Atleti that we've come to know. If they're not playing particularly well, they can almost bully their way into getting into the game. But it wasn't here. And Real Sociedad had hit very comfortable, which is the alarming part for this Atleti. I felt two moments that really stood out in that would be the lead up to the second penalty. It was almost pathetic from Atletico. You had a throw in on the left hand side. It was played in, it was one pass, and then it was the foul for the penalty. And I just thought, far too easy. But again, we saw Carlos Vela, who, after a period where there was a lot of questions whether he had the heart, whether he wanted to be there, he looks like he's got a good relationship with Eusebio. And real credit to Sociedad. You look at the table, and I think it does justify just how they've been playing. They're now sat above Athletic, which is great for them. They'll love that. And I just think we learned a lot about the sides in this game, about Real Sociedad moving forwards and the direction they're trying to take with their style of play. And we learned a lot about parts of Atletico that aren't quite right. I think Sal, on the right-hand side of the pitch, he looks more like a player who likes to be very central and making late runs and surges into the box. And another player who I feel has been a great servant to Spanish football, and that's Gabby. But I just feel maybe that he's not quite right in the middle of the park. He doesn't quite match up with the Atletico that we've seen more of this campaign in the dynamic sense.
And Dan, Atleti's cycle, if you want to call it that, is it starting to come to a bit of a tilt now? Is it starting to, has it run its course under Simeone?
I'm not quite sure, Gav. I think it's a little bit too early to say so in this season. We under Diego Simeone, we used to see a very consistent Athletic side. Every week, you know what to expect from them. But so far this season, we've seen three different kinds of types of Athletic. We've seen the one at the weekend where they lost and they deserve to lose. We've seen them win by playing the typical Simeone style and what we've been used to. And then we've also seen them play Granada and put seven past them. So there's no consistency at the minute. And I think that's where they are dropping points. I think it is a problem what Simeone has to sort out quickly, because obviously they're dropping down. They were top a couple of weeks ago. Now they've dropped down to fourth. I do feel that the Champions League final has something to do with Diego Simeone's changing the approach and changing the style of play, changing the formation. Because in that game, for me, they were the better team. How I looked at it, I think if they played a more attacking style, they'd have won that game in maybe 90 minutes, or definitely in extra time. So I think that could have some thought around, that could be why Diego Simeone has set him up as he has this season. Going back to what Joseph said about Gabby, yeah, I totally agree with you, Joe. I think it's one season too far for him. What Diego Simeone is asking for his players now, I think it's not what Gabby's best at. I think they need to start looking at shifting some players, putting people in. Massive fan of Sol, really, really huge fan. And I think we're going to have to rely a little bit more from one front at right back. I love watching Philippe Luiz. As good as Marcelo has been for years, same with Jordi Alba. At the minute, I would say that Philippe Luiz is the best left back in La Liga. And I think now that they are playing a little bit more attacking, Juanfran needs to get to the level that Philippe Luiz is at.
And Ed, I'll tell us about is, this is, in my opinion, I think Simeone's been out-tactic on both fronts against Sevilla and Real Sociedad. That's two away games in a row. Are other managers now beginning to discover how to break the usual formidable Atleti down?
I think there's an uncertainty in Simeone and exactly what he wants to do. And I think a fair assessment of that question is, once we see exactly, or if we're going to see exactly what he wants to do, it will be then that we'll really see what Simeone is made of at this moment in his managerial career, and whether or not his ideas can represent football at the highest level.
Just to add to that, and to answer the question, Gav, I do feel that is a part of it, that managers are wising up to his tactics. But when you also look at how he has changed style in some games this season, it has left him a little bit more exposed than that we used to. And I think managers are enjoying that, because, let's be honest, for the last couple of seasons, teams haven't had that much space at the edge of the Atleti's box. And I think, is it a dilemma? Is it a crossroads now? And he's going to have to earn his wage.
Well, lads, Osasuna 0, Alaves 1. Now, Joe, decent match this, but surely Alaves now making his claim to insist on remaining in La Liga, because they really do look a solid little unit.
Yeah, they do. And I think when you look at their Segunda campaign, they were very strong then. And I think this match offered us the real idea of where they're at. I would say even more so, rather than playing the top sides that they've done so well against, it's actually the teams that are going to be around them in the expectations that we all set on their promotion. And they looked a class above a side who appear that they're going to be in and around that bottom three all campaign. It would be refreshing to see another side, yet again another side, come up from Segunda and look a comfortable team with ideas. Again, they're not a side who have come into the league and are suddenly thinking, right, we have to have these ideas to move us on in our football. They're bringing what they were last campaign to this, and it's just such a refreshing thing to see in football.
And Dan, what's your thoughts on Osasuna? Are they Granada-esque?
Yeah, I think they are. Just obviously they've got the one win, which is so different from Granada that they haven't got theirs yet, and they're going to be chasing that. But as it stands, I can't see them climbing the table. I can't see them catching the teams above them. I look at the one thing what stuck out to me is the five bookings what Osasuna got in this game. Now, that could become a real issue for them in the next couple of games. If they start getting suspensions and maybe getting someone sent off in a game, they're struggling as it is, and they're not going to do themselves any favours if the disciplinary record is to continue with five bookings like they did at home. I think some of the draws, there's been some interesting points, and you can see that the may pick up some points, but then they go and lose what is on paper a six-pointer at home. At the start of the season, you look at Osasuna versus Alaves, you see how important that a victory is going to be, but as it turns out, Alaves are climbing up and they are mid-table now.
There's a wonderful thing about this Osasuna that has gone almost under the radar because of what you've just suggested there, Dan, and what we're seeing with them. And you take this match, the back five are all from the Pamplona area. And I think those kind of sides need to build on that and use that as their secret weapon for success. And I don't feel after Enrique Martin's sacking at the start of the week, I'm not that convinced that Caparros will come in and offer that and give a sense of the local identity.
He's certainly not going to drastically change them.
Yeah, he's what you'd probably call a veteran within Spanish football. And he certainly, as we would say over here, been around the block. But I just feel, you look at his last La Liga side, Granada, he left them when they were bottom of the league. And it's a perfect match in some way, in the way that Osasuna have been playing in the five at the back. It's hand in hand with a lot of what he's brought to football. But I'm not convinced. And I think the struggle that you two have strongly hinted at is something that I would also follow along with.
I think first and foremost, when you see any home team lining up against somebody of that calibre and you're playing five at the back, that's an automatic no-no. I don't care who you are. At home, you have got to put yourself in a position to attack and score goals. But as they've done all season, they're just so negative. So negative. And if they continue being negative, they can continue to be negative in Segunda next season. Las Palmas 1, Eibar 0. Dan, brilliant result for Las Palmas. But they certainly don't look like the team we've seen from the first few weeks in the Liga. What's happening? Are they just running out of steam?
I think that's one thing, Gav. I do. I think that they put so much energy into the attacking play in the start of this new campaign, and it's looking like it's taking a toll on some players. They also, for me, I think that teams are now starting to figure them out a little bit. I didn't expect them to start as well as they have this season, and the type of football they've been playing has been breathtaking. It's been such joyous football, and now I feel that teams are starting to react to that. I think Eibar played brilliantly. I think it was so cruel for them to lose out and to walk away with no points. But then when you commit a foul in the box and in the 94th minute, you've got to be a little bit more disciplined, haven't you? Now, Roque Mesa won that penalty. And when you talked about fitness and stamina running out of it, getting tired, he weren't as good as he has been, I thought. I don't know about you, Gav. But then it just showed the determination he had at the end to get into the box and to win that penalty.
Yeah, look, that's true. But they certainly, as a collective unit, are not playing an intensity they had done up until, you say, just before the last international break. And, oh God, geez, I'm not putting them down. I think they're still great to watch. They've scored some fantastic goals. Some of the style of play is brilliant. But I think they created an expectation upon themselves. And us, the fans, we bought into it, seeing them absolutely fly out blocks. That I think are we being too greedy in hoping or expecting that they maintain that consistency, Joe?
Yeah, there certainly feels an element of that going on with them. And this game in particular, I felt it really was quite symbolic of how close it really was and how close these two sides are in everything they've brought to the league so far this season.
And Joe, like, between the two of them, between Eibar and Las Palmas, who have you been most impressed with? Because personally for myself, it's Eibar. Because when they lose, I don't think they've lost heavily at all this season.
Yeah, it's a very close one. And I think this may be a case of, if I was going with my heart, I would say Las Palmas, with traditionally my romantic perception of football and the attacking side of it, it would be them. But actually, if I really reflected on the matter and went with my head, I would pick Eibar, and mainly for the reason that you've just suggested, Gav. But then overall, I'd look at both of these sides. I would take Roque Mesa. I would take Inui. I would take Pedro Leon. I would take Luna. And I think these are players that, on what we've seen so far, they would get into your so-called best 11 of players that have every week impressed. And I think it may just swing to Eibar if I was really picking a side who showed the most strength and showed a resilience, in particular the game against Villarreal, where it didn't really bother them. They felt they're trained in the sense that if they go behind, have they really done that much wrong to go behind? And they sort of build from there. And is it now got to a stage, I'd like to ask both of you this actually, has it now got to a stage where we automatically see Eibar as an established La Liga side?
I do, Joe, and I hope to remain an established side, because I actually love the thoughts of small teams, tiny teams, getting to the pinnacle of their selective league. Like, Eibar have a 5,000-seater stadium. Like, that is just extraordinary. And they're hosting teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona. There's clubs, much bigger clubs than them, that could only ever dream about meeting these teams in Europe at some stage. So,
yeah.
I love it. And Leganés came up. Again, a small team. Does not bother me at all that they're there. I think it's great to see them because, you know, it kind of sticks two fingers up to the whole, you know, business of football. You know, you don't need money. You don't need to be rich to compete. It's all about heart. Football is heart and skill and heart. Money is secondary to that. And
I would add to that as well, Gav, that these sides, the two you've just mentioned in particular, they are a real representative. They hold the torch for the side of Spanish football that I've always been in love with. And that, to go with the heart, to go with the passion, it's actually ideas and the idea that you can become established, you can become something with your footballing ideas and what you want to bring to the table, rather than a huge investment that, when you break it down, is quite empty and the ideas don't exist as much.
Yeah, exactly. It creates an extraordinary bond between fans and our team, and you can see it whether it's pissing rain or no at the Epirua, which is usually the case. The place is always packed. Now, okay, there's only 4,500 people there, but that's a quarter, if not more, than the population of Eibar. It's extraordinary. It's fantastic.
What I will say, lads, is long may it continue. They've been an absolute breath of fresh air to La Liga. And going back to the stadium, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi going to a stadium, and it just brings it back down to earth a little bit, and it just shows you what football is about. Both teams have got a point against Real Madrid this season. Unbeaten Real Madrid have dropped points to these two teams. I think it's brilliant.
As we look, lads, we move on to Real Madrid 3 and Leganés 0. Joe, the machine, it keeps churning out wins, but surely it's due a service very, very soon.
Yeah, and a machine is so often relentless but lacks the beauty to go with it. And I wonder if that's Real Madrid at the moment. I would like to start any discussion with this particular fixture back to the statistics thing. And I actually went in at half time, had a quick cup of tea as you do, but I thought, let's check the shots, the overall shots in the game, and 12 shots. And it baffled me, because you look at the game for the first half an hour, you had a Leganés that so easily disrupted the flow of the game. And I couldn't really feel any kind of rhythm in this period of the game. And it wasn't until, even when Gareth Bale did open the scorings, it didn't really feel like Leganés had broken a sweat. They'd gone to arguably the biggest ground in the world and were easy. They felt at ease in the ground. And I really felt the vibes that were telling me that there was an air of frustration amongst the Bernabeu faithful. It was a game that reminded us of Gareth Bale's growing importance, that actually he can stand on his own two feet and actually say, look, I am established here. I've got to a moment of my career where I'm flourishing, and it's okay to do so. I felt there wasn't many standout players from this Real Madrid side, and I just feel when you're playing at home against a team who 9 out of 10 times you will beat, I just felt that they could have offered much more of a fear to feel. It was almost like they were advertising walking football in the second half.
And Dan, are Madrid playing well?
No, simple as that, Gav. They're not. Now, Real Madrid have got massive expectations, absolute massive expectations, and they are still winning games. I mean, they're still undefeated in the league, but they're nowhere near the best, because their best is frightening. When they're all clicking and everything's working as Zidane wants, they are frightening. But what I put it down to two key players missing. Now, one of them is Luka Modric, who has just returned. The fact that he's not been playing has shown up. It's been so clear to see that they're missing him. How he controls the game, how he ups the tempo, how he slows it down when he needs to. I love watching the player. I really do. He's a footballer who just deserves to be on everybody's screen. And he's been a massive, massive miss for him. But now he's back, and I do feel that we'll start to pick up again. And another player they're missing is the Cristiano Ronaldo that we all know. Now, I know Cristiano's still playing, but he's nowhere near his best. Nowhere near it at the minute. And there's times when you've watched Madrid over the past 5-6 seasons where they haven't played great, but Ronaldo's bagged an hat-trick. He's an unbelievable finisher. It doesn't matter if he's outside the box. It doesn't matter if it were a cross coming in. He'd score goals. And at the minute, he's not playing his best. And they're missing that. Fortunately for him, as Joe's just said, Gareth Bale has really stepped up.
Mm.
The fact that he's doing so, I don't think it showed how poor Ronaldo is playing, because they're still getting wins and they're still scoring quite a lot of goals. I mean, we've got 6 at the Villamarin. So Bale has papered over cracks a little bit. And the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo has yet to kick on and start his season like we know he can, it's a big positive for Real Madrid fans to look in the future. Because if we look at the fixtures, the next 4 away matches in La Liga, Atletico, Barcelona, Valencia and Sevilla. And they really do need Cristiano Ronaldo firing on all cylinders for those games.
Yeah, you mentioned those games. For me, if they get 4 points out of the next 2 games against either Barcelona or Atleti, for me, based on the way they're playing at the moment, they're not exciting me at all. But if they get those 4 points, I cannot see anyone winning the league other than them, if that is the way they're playing. And it clearly shows there's so much more room for improvement with them. There's an enormous amount of improvement there. Now, watching Gareth Bale, I can't remember if it was the first or the second goal, but 2 seasons ago, Gareth Bale had got into that position. He had Ronaldo with 5 yards away from him. He would have passed that 2 seasons ago. This season, there was nothing else in his mind other than putting the ball in the back of the net. Now, that's brilliant for Gareth Bale. It's brilliant for Real Madrid fans. But, Joe, to touch on something that, you know, that Dan said there regarding waiting to see, you know, Ronaldo, are we going to see that Ronaldo again? Is he done? at this level? I know it's a bold thing to be hitting with, but is he done at this level?
I believe that Cristiano is coming to a moment in his career where he can either take two paths, and the first path is that he goes on into his 30s and we recognise him as this eternal figure of somebody who adapted his game slightly, realised how he could use his body, and he can go on and do that. Or he can struggle, he can continue to look in the past, and maybe there's this hint that we could go into the next 3 or 4 years with him in his 30s, and we kind of sigh and think, this was a player that had my admiration for many, many years, and now all of a sudden the light isn't quite there. And I think it's a fascinating story, and one that I'll be there every step of the way to see just how he does this. I think the determination qualities that we've seen over the years, the relentlessness to be the best, it's very hard to do that all the way through your 30s without adapting. You take somebody like Totti, who I think for many, many years played in a particular way, realised that he could no longer do that, and yet found that brilliance within him and channeled that brilliance into something else. It's one that I have faith that Cristiano can do that. I just wonder whether he has the tools around him to complete that job.
See, the only thing I'd worry about that is, look, I'm a Barcelona fan, but I've always admired Cristiano Ronaldo. I've never been one of these clowns to ever put him down for anything he's ever done on a football pitch. Now, what I'd worry for is, he is clearly slowing down. It's unmissable. But if he continues to put up with abuse from A, the Barcelona fan club, and even his own fan club, that eventually he'll be remembered more for crashing than what he'd done before it. I think there's a natural progression for these footballers to do. If he just accepts that he's not who he used to be. And as you said, you know, become the Totti role. But I think his ego is way too big to be even thinking like that, Joe. And that's my worry for Ronaldo, that, you know, he'll become an absolute shadow of his former self. And that's what will stick in people's minds, because at the same time when he's crashing, Messi will always have that soft landing because he seems to adapt more. He's been every position on Barcelona, bar the back line. And he brings genius to each position. So we'll never look at Messi and say, he used to be brilliant. We will look at Messi up until the end and go, man, that was just a pleasure. Ronaldo, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen with him. And I think it's sad because he has been arguably the greatest goal scorer in history over the last few years.
Just to add on to that, Gav, you talked about he has been the greatest goal scorer. I saw a stat on Twitter. I can't remember who put it on now, so apologies for that, but in the Champions League this season, it said that Cristiano Ronaldo has scored 2 goals from 28 shots. And that, watching Cristiano in his time at Real Madrid, we know he takes a lot of shots. You give him the ball, he's having a pop at the net. But to only score 2 from 28 against, don't get me wrong, they've got Borussia Dortmund in the group with them. But when you look
he's against teams that he has chances to score. It's not like he's up against Atletico Madrid each week. No, what you're saying is spot on. He has had ample opportunities to score goals, and he's not putting them away in the way he used to do them. I mean, you said 2 out of 28. That should be at Ronaldo's standards. That should be at least 8 out of, you know, 1 in 3 shots, because that's who we've remembered Ronaldo as. But I just don't think this is Ronaldo anymore. I think it's now time to start calling him Cristiano.
Now, one thing I've just been thinking about, just listening to both you speak there, Gav, a lot of people look at footballers and still remember him for what they were. So when I talk to people, sometimes I talk about Ronaldo as in the winger who were at Man United, the winger who would take people on in run at them. Now, for the past couple of seasons at Real Madrid, he's been a number 9. That his game has changed so differently. He scores goals. So some people look, oh yeah, fair enough, he's not scoring as many as he normally does, but he'll still be taking people. Well, no, he doesn't. He doesn't do that no more. And I think that's giving him a bit of protection, that people are expecting him to still have an influence on the game, which he used to have as a wide man who'd cross a lot of balls into the box, who'd feed his teammates. If he's not scoring goals, what is he bringing to that Real Madrid team?
It's a good point, but lads, we've spent enough time speaking about Real Madrid, so it's time to move on. And we move on to Espanyol 0 and Athletic 0. And as per usual, since the start of the season, there is one game every single week that reminds you as if you're watching a Premier League game. And A, it annoys me, and B, they're just not getting the time of day on this as punishment. So we'll skip that and we'll move on to Celta 2, Valencia 1. Joe, pretty impressive comeback from Celta. Fully warranted, what?
Yes, it really was. It was a comeback that showed the Galician spirit. And there's one point, actually, I'd like to take from Celta and one particular player, and that's Iago Aspas. And I've seen today alone, I've seen this. It's diverting a little bit from the game itself, but I think it's an important point to make because he's a player that's really shone out, not just this campaign, but last campaign as well. You can see he enjoys his football so much, and he offers so much to the side. He did in this game, he has done in other match days of this campaign, and this idea that he is a flop because he didn't feel happy at one club. And I often think in football, sometimes it's just not for you. We all go through jobs where our character doesn't rise to the surface and it's just not for us. That doesn't make us a failure. It doesn't make us a bad person. It just doesn't work. And that was just a little side note about that particular player.
To one of my favourite players in the last 15 years, Diego Forlan.
Oh, that's a great correlation. Yeah, I like that a lot.
His time spent at Man United followed him around from English fans for donkey's years. And not realising that he'd a two Golden Boot awards and arguably one of Uruguay's greatest ever footballers. He was sensational to watch. And as you said, Joe, it just didn't fit for him. Just like Aspas at Liverpool, it just didn't work out. But he is brilliant. I love watching Aspas. I think he's brilliant for Celta. And he'll rightly go down, if he stays with them, as a legend for Celta. And I think he now sees that because he seems to love playing for the jersey. You can see it in him. You see the fans with him. It's fantastic watching it.
And he only needs one or two touches very often. And he's just got a very cool and composed manner in front of goal. And I feel he's just so important to them. But then you go back to this game with Celta and Valencia. And I felt that we saw the bad in Valencia again. We saw their unwillingness to actually, when you're taking a lead, and particularly in this ground, it's okay to hold that. It's okay to adapt your game to think we are in a position where we can be solid and we can build on that solidness. And again, it didn't happen with Prandelli's men. I just feel he's not offering the spark that was so needed. And I remember when we first discussed when he had the chance and he took over Valencia, whether it was going to work. And I'm feeling that we could potentially get to January and we're not going to see a Valencia that have improved that drastically.
And Dan, you know, Prandelli, he is a good manager. Is he playing any differently to Paco Estiarán?
I don't think so, no. I don't think there's much change in from Paco now to Prandelli. But what makes me think is I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another managerial change by the end of the season. Now, I know it's very early to judge, but just how things are going at Valencia, I wouldn't be surprised at all if some more, they turn into even more of a shambles. Because, like, over weekend against Celta, they had a few chances, but they just look lacklustre up top and they can't hold on to a lead. As Joe's just said, the 90th minute penalty against Barcelona, which cost them the point. I just think at the minute that they're in serious trouble. Now, I don't think they'll get relegated or anything like that, but whoever's in charge, I think they're going to have such a tough job on their hands.
Well, lads, we move on to the next one. Villarreal 2, Betis 0. Dan, we'll stick with you, Chief. For me, Villarreal are just a cool team to watch. Two spectacular goals. I mean, can they genuinely break into the top four this season?
Oh, most definitely, Gav. Now, if you'd have asked me this at the start of the season, it would have been a completely different answer. I think you look at Marcelino, look at Pioneers Marcelino, you look at the injuries, Roberto Soldado injured, Bacambo injured, players gone, they lost Eric Bailly, they lost Denis Suarez. I just thought that we were going to struggle. They faded away towards the end of last season, They lost in the Europa League to a very good Liverpool team. I just thought they may have struggled to kickstart the season early on. But I must say they've been brilliant. I've thoroughly enjoyed every game I've watched so far from VRL this season. And I thoroughly enjoyed this one too. No thanks to Betis, but with how good VRL were. Attacking-wise, they've got so many key players that I admire. I love watching Bacambul play. Samuel Castillejo, massive fan of him as well. I think he's going to have a great future and a great career in the sport. I just wonder, have they got enough come the end of the season? As we saw last season, Gav, with the dropped off from we're focusing on the Europa League. Obviously, we're so close to the final. Home win in the first leg against Liverpool. But the form dropped in La Liga. And the last six games, they only got 4 points. One win, one draw. And if they're going to be in a similar situation, whether it be in the Europa League or not, but are they going to drop off again? When the going gets tough at the end of the season, have they got it in them to challenge Atletico Madrid, challenge Sevilla for the top four spots?
I suppose we'll have to actually see who actually drops into it from the Champions League. And if Villarreal are still there, I'm sure they'll use what experience they used last year, because they were brilliant in it last year. But to be fair to them, that Liverpool in the second leg, you know, to be fair to Liverpool, I'm not usually fair to them, they were brilliant and they deserve to go through. But I think, you know, personally, I think Villarreal, I think they're definitely good. They'll definitely make Europe either way this season. But I'd love to see them hit top four. And if it means giving up on the Europa League, you know, so be it. I think they're a fantastic team to watch. And I think they deserve, for the type of club they are, it's a very small club, but an exceptionally well-run club. That getting into the Champions League for them is brilliant. It's brilliant. Joe, what do you reckon on Villarreal this season?
They are so often the sides that actually go under the radar. And I actually wonder with Villarreal if we take them for granted sometimes and we don't actually just take a moment to acknowledge that actually their whole ethos for, as you've just said there, for a very small club. I mean, where I live, we are as in football team, we are in the lower divisions, but we're a bigger city than Villarreal. And I just think that's wonderful. They've got a very clear way. I look back to Villarreal 5 years ago, and actually what they're trying to do, I don't see that much difference. I think they offer maybe a bit of a sharper counter-attack, but they've always stuck with a particular way of playing football. I don't particularly like the word philosophy that much, but I think they do have a very clear philosophy and a very clear outlook, and they prosper under that. As Dan said, very difficult at the start of the campaign, but they seem to have just acknowledged that and taken it in their stride. And all the time they have Bruno, it's not really a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful Bruno. What a man. That's before we go on to the last game, I'm going to ask you to give me a one-word answer. I'll start with you, Joe. Poye, he has to go.
He has to go, and I apologise for rebelling against the one-word answer there.
Gosh, you do, Joe, but all's forgiven me.
It's worth mentioning that actually, in the last few days, there's been a very bizarre situation at the club, whereas the ultras and very dedicated Betis fans have almost given him the ultimatum of, we won't turn up to the games if Gus Poyet stays on as coach. He appears somebody who has lost lots of parts of the boat and is swimming in a green sea.
And as you mentioned, Betis fans, who are arguably the most passionate and ferocious fans in La Liga, when they say it's time to go, it's time to go. And you know what, I kind of feel sorry on them, because they're a club that do not deserve what they've had over the last few years. I mean, their fan base is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. You know, I just wish one day, you know, they'd be top five, top four, winning Copa del Rey, because, you know, they're like Newcastle in that regard. You know, they both have fantastic fan bases, brilliant stadium, but their owners are just gobshites.
Yeah, that's a really nice comparison, that. And I often have people over here ask me about Betis, and they're a bit in the unknown about them. And I respect that. And I say to them, well, I'll use that in the future, Gav. Thank you very much for that. The Newcastle, and just how big they are on the wider scale when you look at them as a club. I actually have a small dream of, like you, Gav, of Betis being right up there. I can see them in this dream, in cup finals, in the last few match days, challenging for, you know, top four spot. And I actually think, wow, imagine those fans, because they're incredible. And it would just be, I think it would be the hairs on the back of your neck. You get that when they're, when they've been eighth, ninth in the division, and they've had a solid season. You get the feel of that then, the electricity. It would be tenfold that. They would be rivaling most football stadiums and fans in the world, yeah.
And Dan, what about you? He has to go, in my opinion. I can't even ask it any other way. I think he has got to be reefed out of it.
Well, my one word, mate, is immediately. Simple as that.
So we're not going to get a big 5-minute dissect like Joe, though.
Well, I'll give you a minute or so. The players just, they look so bored, and they look so not clueless in terms of their own ability, but what they are expected to do. I just think they offered nothing to the game against Villarreal, and it just looked like a team who you could just see the new. It sooner or later is going to go, and they're not playing for him at all. There you go, mate. About a minute.
Yeah. No, in fairness, I think you cracked it with that words. They do actually look bored, and with that, they also look boring, and that has to be down to Poyet, because the players he has at that better squad, they should be playing an awful lot more of an attractive game. They've lovely footballers there, and he just seems to be restricting them. It's like he's trying to prove a point to who knows. He's turned Betis from an attractive looking team in the Liga to arguably on par with Granada and Osasuna as the most boring, and that's saying something. And I haven't even put Espanyol into that category. But lads, we move on to easily the game of the week. Sevilla 1, Barcelona 2. Joe, personally, best game of football I've seen all season in La Liga. And that includes Sevilla 4-6-4. Was it 6-4, Joe? See, that's how good this game was. It's distracted me. But what 3 points to win, Joe?
Well, first of all, this was a phenomenal game of football. It had the energy of 5 games put into one. And it offered us so much insight into both clubs. So often when you have games full of that energy, full of that relentless intensity, you come away thinking, well, actually, what have I learnt about the two clubs? But it just wasn't the case in this game. We learnt bundles about what we can maybe see in the future. It projected so much for us. And you go to the first half, you go to Sevilla, and I think this was their best half of the campaign, because I think it offered both Sampaoli and what he has to bring to the club, and the idea of playing with intelligence, playing with that relentlessness. But then it also had that Sevilla element to it, where you had the fans, you had the traditional Sevilla that we so often expect, the Sevilla that came to the forefront with Emery. And you look after a minute, they have a shot, they have a corner, and they are at Barcelona in that half. I thought Mariano and Escudero, who has been rightfully called up internationally, those two were pushing really far up, and they were almost punishing Barcelona. And I mean punishing Barcelona in the sense that the flip side of that coin, in this half, we saw the problems of Luis Enrique's Barcelona, and particularly the problems of this campaign, whereas a midfield disintegrates, and then you take the second period, equally as thrilling, but for different reasons. And I will come in here with Messi rhetoric, and I so often, in private conversations, in conversations on podcasts or with other football fans, I resist talking about him, because I don't feel I can do any justice to what he brings to the footballing universe and what he brings to overall life. And I think Messi reminded us that actually it's okay to have that conversation, and I can give you more than what you maybe ever thought I could give you. And we saw a Messi who, in the words of Sampaoli before and after the game, and in the words of Castro, the president, well, they just kind of accepted that actually we see something special here. He offered something beautiful, and he actually stripped back. We so often talk about positions in football, but he reminded us that a football field just has space, and he occupied so much space, so many different areas of space, so many levels of understanding of just where to be. And I just felt Neymar, as another player, I've been very critical of him for not only this campaign, but the end of last campaign. But he pegged Mariano back, and a Mariano, as I've said, who had such a fantastic first half, he pegged him back. He ran past him four or five times and made him look very slow. And the two other Barcelona players I would just quickly mention would be Denis Suarez, who appeared to have his best period since returning to Barcelona, and Umtiti, who probably could hold his head just as high in both halves because he stopped that ship sinking in the first period.
Yeah, well, personally for myself, watching this game, I thought Sevilla's 45 minutes in the first half was the best 45 minutes of football I'd seen in the league all season. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. I thought Barcelona looked frightened for the first time in a long time. They were rattled. Second half, I was treated to the new best half of the season. I thought Barcelona were exceptional in that second half. And it led me to believe that I don't think that was Enrique that got up on them at halftime. I really don't. I think that was the players that were realising that, you know, if you want to, you know, they're losing their grip on the La Liga trophy. Because Sevilla were by far and away the better side in the first half. I don't think Enrique has control of those players the way a lot of fans would perceive he does. I think that was Messi and some of the senior players realising that they haven't been playing well for weeks and basically telling the youngsters, especially Denis Suarez, because how could any player go from being arguably the worst player on the pitch in the first half to man of the match in the second? That was an extraordinary turnaround. I don't think for 1 second Enrique had a go at him, because if that was the case, why isn't Denis Suarez playing like that every single game? Because that's a coach's job, is to get players fired up. Messi, I've watched Messi since he's been a kid. I've seen these type of performances every single week when he was in his younger years. That was vintage Messi. That was the moments where you've seen him doing something, you hold your breath for 5 seconds, your eyelids pop back, and you're just, it's that incredible anticipation as to what we're going to see next. Now, there was one opportunity he could have scored one of the greatest goals you'd have ever seen. We kicked it over, but it didn't make it any less exciting watching them. It was an amazing game of football. And Sevilla, 10 out of 10. Barcelona, 10 out of 10. The only difference on that pitch was Messi. And it's as simple as that. What about you, Dan? What was your take on the game?
Absolutely marvellous, Gav. Absolutely phenomenal game of football. I've been looking forward to this match since the 18th of August, which was when the second leg of the Spanish Super Cup finished. Obviously, it started at 11 o'clock at night and went into the morning of the 18th. At that stage, I thought it weren't a true reflection of Sevilla and the San Paolo. Obviously, the first couple of games in charge. And since then, watching Sevilla every week in La Liga, in the Champions League, I've just been so excited for this game. And it didn't disappoint, like you both have said. Unbelievable. The intensity in the game. I was tired watching it. I was just 1 minute Sevilla attacking, then Barcelona attacking, then Sevilla attacking, then Barcelona. I've not seen a football match as intense as that in a long time. I know there's been a debate recently about how intense the Premier League is and telling Pep Guardiola that he's not had anything like this before, as intense as this. I'll tell you what, I haven't seen a football game as intense in years. Just unbelievable.
From watching it, Dan, again, like I put my thoughts in there, especially the second half, did Sevilla not show enough in the overall game to say, you know, these have got to be taken seriously as a unit, because they're gradually seem to be impressing more and more each week in certain. I still think there's more to this Sevilla that has to come. And that is, for me, as a Barcelona fan, I'm just delighted we've played them away. And we don't have to be coming like up against these boys in February or March.
Yeah, completely agree with you, mate. I really do. Only thing what was the difference, as you said, was Messi. If Messi didn't put in that second half performance and the last 5 minutes of the first half, Barcelona don't walk away with 3 points. Simple as that. The lead, the points difference between Real Madrid extends. They don't take 3 points. That was just something. I find it hard to describe Messi when he's performing like that. You just need to watch it. Yeah, you just need to watch him. The chance you're on about where he took it past three players at the edge of the box. And
they didn't move, Dan. It was like, they just didn't move.
I had to rewind it. I picked up Mr. Gary Moore. I watched it back about three times just to see how he did it, to see how he shifted his body weight. And it's unfortunate for Sevilla that they had to be at the receiving end of that, especially after what happened in the Copa del Rey final when he scored the unbelievable solo goal as well against them. They're just so unfortunate because they put so much effort in the first half and Zonzi were absolutely shattered.
Knackered.
I've seen lawnmowers that don't cover as much grass as he did. It's just everywhere it was there. And if he didn't have a day off Monday, I don't know what San Paoli was thinking because it was shattered.
But Joe, San Paoli wasn't disappointed after that match in his press conference. He was actually he'd high praise for Barcelona and the players. Is that shown, I'm not going to use the word confidence, is that shown that, you know, we have got to start believing in this man because, as Dan rightly, correctly said, they should have had 2-3 goals in that first half. And if that was the case, that game is dead and buried.
Yeah, and I do think there was a element of confidence and not much criticism after the game because, let's not forget, this is a man who builds his footballing picture on intelligence and making football players aware that there's a greater understanding of the game and they're not that far out of reach of it. And sometimes in these kind of fixtures, we've all come to this conclusion that Leo Messi's intelligence took Barcelona over the line. And I don't think as a coach who believes in all of those ideas, he can go against that. He can turn the tide and decide something else. His side can take great encouragement from this game. In that first period, they tied Barcelona to the floor. And there are moments where we see Barcelona stretched and under pressure, but I'm not that convinced that I've seen it as often and as effective as what this Sevilla gave. I think another player that's worth mentioning in there is Nasri. And again, in that first period, he showed that he's arguably the best central midfielder in the campaign so far. And I think you're right, Gav. I think there's far much more to come from this Sevilla. But I don't think Dan's right in thinking that Nzonzi would have the day off. You can guarantee they were there the next morning and Sampaoli had his little woolly hat on and he was ready to go because he's relentless and he wants to expand football at any cost.
Just to jump in there, gents, I've just realised I was talking about Messi. It does this to me sometimes. My brain stops working. I'm talking about the goal. Obviously, the other goal he scored against Athletic in the Copa del Rey final, not Sevilla. But just to switch on back what Josh just mentioned, Nasri, do we see Nasri becoming Sevilla's Messi?
Do you know what I will say? I never liked Nasri at Manchester City. I just thought he was too petulant and arrogant. He just had a swagger about him that I didn't like because he was always found out in big games. Watching him at Sevilla, it's like Sampaoli says, hold on a second, you know what, there is a bit of bite in you. There is a bit of nastiness. But you are talented. I tell you what, you take the middle of the pack. I don't think a player like Nasri has to be coached. I think he is talented enough to be given that free role. And as Joe rightly says, when you think about it, he possibly has been the best central midfield player in the league this season. And I don't think anyone expected that.
He fell out of love with football and
That's right. That's Joe, you're spot on. He seemed like he didn't care at Man City.
And I think it's almost the perfect place for him to go because he actually comes in touch with somebody who I think could take somebody who doesn't like football and within a half hour, a coffee and a conversation and they'll be the biggest football lover in the world. And I think Nasri needed that. He needed that. I'm like you, Gav. I've been very critical of Nasri in the last few campaigns. I think he's somebody who looks very disinterested at times, but it's been such a remarkable turnaround. But actually, really, it's not that much of a surprise because he has really gone somewhere where football the whole Sevilla culture is, there just seems to be such a love for football. They seem to live and breathe, and that passion comes out, and he's made the right choice going there. Mr. Guardiola wanted to keep him on. He realised that actually he could soak up a lot of ideas, and he had a lot already going for him. But he chose, and I think that's the important part.
Yeah, we wrap up there, lads, before we go. Gav's questions. I'm going to start with you, Dan. Goal of the week.
Tough one, but I have to go with Manu Trigueros for Villarreal. The strike in itself was a beautiful strike. No chance for Dan and Vinette to get anything onto that, really. But the timing of the goal was so vital to Villarreal. They dominated the game, but halfway through the first half, it did seem that it could have been in one of those where the fan, I'm not saying that the Villarreal fans get onto their backs, but they could have started to think, oh, is it not going to be our game, this? Waiting, they had a few chances before that, and then all of a sudden Manu thinks, you know what, here we go, I'm just going to have a go. Pop, straight in the top corner, and they went from strength to strength after that. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Trigueros as a goal.
So you're looking for the goal that's handed somebody that P45. That's really classy of you. That's really classy.
Hey, Joe. Points. Go on, mate.
Sorry, man. Go on, Joe.
I'll have to go Messi's goal, because I think it was a goal that reminded us that actually, let's not take this for granted and think that we've seen it all before and therefore we don't discuss it. And the goal was a work of art. He went into a corner that I didn't think was possible. I know there was the controversy about Rakitic impeding it. I think from the angle of Messi's eyes looking on, the goalkeeper had a very clear view of the ball and he just brushed it into the corner. There wasn't power. It was just the ultimate placement. And that's why I'd have to pick Messi's goal this week.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you both. It was Ron Caglia's goal for Celta. A, because it was an absolute amazing finish, and B, because it was Ron Caglia. End of story. So those were the two goals. Nothing in comparison. Nothing. But Dan, I'm going to hit you for your three winners and losers of the week. Right, Dan, your three winners and losers.
Right, Gav. So first of all, I'm going to say Real Madrid. They're still the top of the leaders, the top of the league, unbeaten, and they've got their central midfielder, Luka Modric, back from injury. Like I said earlier, I love watching Luka play, and I know for a fact the Real Madrid players all love having him back because he controls the game, he makes them tick. Real Sociedad are also another winner for me this week after a brilliant performance against Atletico. It puts them now above their rivals, Athletic Bilbao, which gives the bragging rights to the La Real fans for a couple of weeks, maybe. And Villarreal, a great performance. I didn't expect them to be doing as well. And long may it continue, because they are a joy to watch at the minute. Now, the three losers, I'm going to have to go for Atletico. From leading the league to now 6 points adrift, something's not right. And Diego Simeone, although I do think he will get it right, has got a job in his hands. Real Betis, as we've said, they were poor. They really were poor. You've got Ruben Castro not starting games. You've got players just walking around the pitch at times. Gus has got to go. And then finally, maybe controversial this, Eibar. I thought they played very well. However, to play so well against a good team in Las Palmas and to walk away with 0 points is not great, is it? Let's be honest.
Right, Joe. Up to you now, Chief.
I'm going to go winners. I'm going to start with Barcelona. And I don't particularly believe that the overall game, the model, will bring them success. And I think the model is still under question. But I think the second half, they showed the champion quality and it was a massive 3 points. I would go Malaga for, again, providing us with Friday night entertainment. That's four on a bounce now at home. And I just think that is going to be crucial. And I'm going to go Villarreal because, as I mentioned earlier, they so often are in the shadows. But they're a fantastic football team and they play football that brings joy. My losers, sadly, it's going to have to be that one game, as you said, Gav, that we get every week. It's going to have to be Athletic and Espanyol. And the other team is going to have to be Atletico because the courage was not there in this game. Okay, the big players had an off day in their performance, but the courage wasn't there. It was 75 minutes in. You had an interchange on the left between Carrasco and Felipe Luis, and Felipe Luis passed the ball into Carrasco. He was 4 or 5 yards offside, and he came back and his head dropped, and it wasn't the attitude that I expect from Atletico Madrid.
I'm going to go for Barcelona because I thought the second half performance was sensational. They showed what it is to be champions, and hopefully they push on from there. La Real, because they beat Atletico, they done it convincingly in my opinion. I'm also going to give it to Villarreal because, again, every week they're a joy to watch. Losers have to be Atletico Madrid, Simeone, and their man Carlo, in your face, Chief. Fifth. And he's going to end up fifth. Well, lads, look, thanks for joining me. Joe, where can you be found?
You can find me on the wonderful world of Twitter at JosephMac94. And if I'm not there, I'll be reading or walking or enjoying the autumn blues. But again, I just encourage you to follow our main man, Gav here, rightly and aptly so called our Liga Gav, but also to follow Dan with his cool Viking vibe voice that he's got going on.
Dan, mate, where can you be found?
First of all, thank you for having me on, guys. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I love Twitter. I'm always on Twitter. I talk a lot about Spanish football, so at DowellBFC, that's DOWLE. Thanks again for having me on. Loved it, guys. Right. Loved it.
More than welcome, and you can find me at La Liga Gav. But do us all a favour. Leave us a favourable review on iTunes. It really does help the pod out a lot because you've no reason to leave a negative review because that'd just be wrong. And check out the World Football Index website. Absolutely incredible articles going up there daily now at this stage. And check out everything World Football has to offer on the podcast. And lads, thanks very much. See you again next week where we will be discussing Spain's exploits over the next few days. Good night.